Today is Monday, April 22nd, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. The Biden administration rips anti-Semitic protests on college campuses. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. You can send us your thoughts as well. quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. That's our email. Joining me now to get through the news of the cray, Billy Hallowell. On this Monday morning, we've got a lot to get to, as always, and we just had the 25th anniversary of Columbine, Billy. On a focus story, we're going to take a look at one of the survivors who has an incredible story.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe 25 years has gone by, but we're going to get into Craig Scott's story. His sister, Rachel Joy Scott, died at Columbine. Lots to talk about there, lots to reflect on.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the main thing coming up, we are going to be taking a look at the growing homelessness crisis and how Christians are stepping into the gap. Madison Seals has the details there coming up on the main thing. Make sure you subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts. DC Debrief with John Stolness, Newsmakers with Billy, full-length interview each and every weekday. Don't miss those. You can check those out in the description of this podcast episode. Got the links to go ahead and follow those there. All right, we're going to head over to the news now in 90 seconds. And the White House called these protests at Columbia University blatantly anti-Semitic, unconscionable, and dangerous. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's daughter was among the protesters who were arrested at these protests, and she said she was proud of her daughter. Meanwhile, Biden said in a statement that silence is complicity, and he said, while every American has the right to peaceful protest, calls for violence and physical intimidation targeting Jewish students and the Jewish community are blatantly anti-Semitic, unconscionable, and dangerous. They have absolutely no place on any college campus or anywhere in the United States of America. And the White House Deputy Press Secretary Andrew Bates said in a statement, after video emerged on social media over the weekend that appeared to show these pro-Palestinian activists telling Jewish students, quote, the 7th of October is going to be every day for you. And added that echoing the rhetoric of terrorist organizations, especially in the wake of the worst massacre committed against the Jewish people since the Holocaust, is despicable. And Grammy-winning Christian recording artist Mandisa has passed away. K-Love reported it first, and in a statement they said Mandisa loved Jesus and she used her unusually extensive platform to talk about him at every turn. Those are just some of today's top headlines. Check out more stories over at cbnnews.com. Billy, this really was shocking to hear of Mandisa's passing. This happened on Friday, so after our podcast had posted on Friday, so we didn't get that news in that podcast, but I'm going to mention it today because, I mean, we've interviewed her. I have the link to Trey actually interviewed her a few years ago and talked to her at length about several issues, and so we'll link to that podcast episode. That special interview that he had there that we posted. So really just kind of shocking. She was 47 and it came out of nowhere. She did talk about some anxiety struggles and depression struggles she had in her life, particularly when one of her friends had cancer and was struggling with that. And so just really sad news.
Yeah, you know, this is somebody who, one of the things that really struck me over the weekend from Friday through, you know, Monday, was just seeing all of these people, these other famous artists, well-known Christians, pastors, people whose lives she had touched. Everybody had a photo with her, they had dealt with her, they had worked with her, and they were all reflecting. So, you know, she had a deep impact on so many people's lives outside of just, you know, the music and people knowing her for what she did. So it's it was pretty shocking. I think people are, you know, waiting for answers. That, you know, there's no cause of death yet, and I know that there's an investigation into that. And so it's one of those things when you first hear it, you think, gosh, I hope this isn't true, right? I hope that they got the story wrong. And unfortunately, it was confirmed, and it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it really is. And people remember her, of course, from American Idol. And she actually had, and I'd forgotten about this, but Simon had actually commented on her weight. And that really impacted her. And, you know, he was kind of basically saying like, hey, I don't know if this is going to work because, you know, of your weight. And she hit back at him, which at that, you know, which was a courageous thing to do. I think this was, I think after an, she didn't write in that moment, but then at a, on a later appearance, she talked about how much that impacted her and that that's not where her identity comes from. And so, and then she basically said she'll be praying for him, and talking about forgiveness and things like that. So, you know, she definitely put her mark into the world on faith and was open and upfront about some tough issues. So, yeah, so definitely need to be praying for her friends, her family, everybody impacted by that for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I just wanted to add, you know, she forgave him very openly and, you know, and mentioned Jesus in that forgiveness. Yeah. He said a couple of really horrible things. Do we think that we have a bigger stage this year? Do we have a bigger stage? These sorts of comments about her weight. And she just very openly forgave him. And that was a very memorable moment.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly was. So definitely prayers on that situation for sure. All right. We are going to head over to the focus story now. And the 25th anniversary of Columbine was Saturday, and survivor Craig Scott shared some powerful reflections and updates. So tell me about what happened here.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the survivors were out in Littleton, Colorado. And, you know, Craig Scott is unique in, I mean, everybody who went through this horrific stories, but his sister, Rachel Joyce, she died during the shooting. She was one of the 12 students who died. There was also a teacher who was killed. And, you know, this was just going back, and I think everybody knows this, but, you know, this is 25 years now, and this was one of the first big mass shootings. It's the one that sort of shocked the American conscience. We hadn't really seen something like it in decades. And so when this happened, I think it just left everybody, you know, in total and utter shock. And so Craig has been very reflective, his entire family over the years, speaking out, you know, just about what they went through, what they faced. And, you know, he talked about with us in an interview, actually, about how he's dedicated a lot of his life to sharing his sister's story, his story, traveling around and speaking. And so we spoke to him early last week. It was very interesting to see almost every outlet in America have him on or have someone else on who was dealing with this. But we did a 44-minute interview with him. We went very deep on his story, on his family's story, and what they've been doing since it happened 25 years ago.
Yeah, and we'll link to that video, by the way, in the description of this podcast. We'll put that link in there so you can check that interview out. And it is really in-depth, as you said. And so how is his sister? Because, you know, her story touched a lot of people. So, Rachel, how did that make a lasting impact?
You know, there are a number of things. There are a couple of books, and if people are interested from a Christian perspective, Rachel's Tears is one of them. It was written by Craig and Rachel's parents. You know, she was a really unique 17-year-old. You know, they described her as sort of an old soul. She had written these journals, and there are six or seven of these journals, just like a lot of teenagers keep, talking about her faith, her life, and those journals, some of them were in her backpack that day when she was killed. But in those journals, a lot of messages that some people have considered prophetic. She had this idea that she wasn't going to live a long life. She talked a lot about this in her journals, wanting to have an impact on millions of people for Jesus. You know, these are things that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't, as a teenager, be writing in their journals. And the family didn't really discover this until after they read through them. So there are a number of books on this, but her family, the Scott family, they've created something called Rachel's Challenge, and it's a program that's actually in public schools, which is really interesting. And they have spoken to millions and millions of people around the country about, you know, suicide awareness, treating each other well, trying to help kids avoid these sorts of situations in schools. And so from a practical position, they've had this speaking program that has helped people for 25 years, has prevented school shootings, has stopped thousands of suicides by sharing her life story. And then, you know, just by sharing her faith and who she was there, again, we can't get into all the elements now, but there's some really interesting, you know, spiritual elements and including the fact, and Craig talked about this in our interview, that she was, you know, she was killed and targeted in some ways, or at least mocked for her faith in the final moments of her life at, you know, Columbine. So I'm just standing by her faith, even in the midst of that. So many moving pieces, but her faith has inspired many, many people since her death.
Yeah. And what was Craig's own experience at Columbine, her brother?
Yeah. So, you know, Rachel was the first person killed. She was outside of the school, I believe, when the shooting unfolded, and about 30 yards away, Craig was inside the school library. And if you remember, the school library was where the majority of the carnage took place. 10 people were killed in that library, 10 students. And Craig was in that library. He described in detail in our interview what unfolded. Two of his friends were next to him. They were both killed next to him. And, you know, he said, "I thought I would be next. I thought I was going to die." And for whatever reason, they did not kill him. And, you know, so he described, he really saw everything that unfolded in that room. He talked about how it was about 7 minutes or so, and it fell like an eternity as this was going on. So it's one of those things, I mean, as we talk about it, even you, it's one of those things that sticks with you forever. It's not something you're going to very easily forget when the people you love are slaughtered around you in a school library.
Well, yeah. And also just that moment where you really did face death, you know, and it's not every day that you get kind of jarred into that reality that your life can be snatched from you at any moment, that, you know, it's not promised, right? Tomorrow is not promised. And to see that sort of traumatic event around you, and then also to have your own life threatened. And really, it sounds like it's miraculous that he, you know, like wasn't taken, because everyone else is getting killed around him. It's just horrific, a horrific thing to go through. What was the God moment that he talked about, Billy, that he encountered?
Yeah, this is one of those crazy moments, and it's you know, so challenging because of everything that was going on around him. But he felt, and he's very careful when he talks about this, but he said, "I heard God speak to me in those moments." You know, he was underneath a desk or a table in the library where his two friends were killed, and he, as this was going on, he felt God say, he needed to do something, that he needed to get up and get out of there. It was a very clear message that he felt and heard. And so he stood up, not knowing where the shooters were. They had apparently left the library at that point. And he then told everybody else, "Get out of here. We have to get out of here." He repeated that message that he heard. He said it was very clear. And the rest of the students that were in that library were able to get out and get outside. They ran before the shooters could have come back in or, you know, harmed them again. And so that message of just get up, he listened to it. He got out of there, and so did the others, and they were able to survive. And so him describing that, you know, and it's very clear, it wasn't just like him in his head. It was a message that he felt very clearly came from God in those moments. And remember, you're in shock. You're in total, you know, panic and chaos. And so he was able to get outside and help some of the other students who were injured at that point.
Yeah, it really was what you said, Billy, just really shocking, the American conscience. And sadly, it's become more commonplace now that people feel the need to do this. And, you know, of course, guns has become the center of debate around this. And really, we have a much deeper problem than that. You know, we have a spiritual problem. We have a problem of people who are just so far lost and so far from God that they have lost the intrinsic value of human life and have gone so far off the rails, and then now see these sorts of things happen and copycat and get the idea. And it's much bigger than the problem of the physical, of the vehicle that is essentially used to carry out these acts of violence. The problem goes much deeper than that. It's deeply, deeply spiritual.
It is. And he talks a lot about that in our interview, so I'd encourage people to watch that. And I would just add one last thing. One of the most interesting elements of this story with his sister, you know, the shooters in their manifesto, as they were talking about what they wanted to do, they kept talking about wanting to create a chain reaction of evil. And you talk about spiritual warfare, right? A chain reaction of evil that they wanted to spark other school shootings that day. That was their goal. And his sister, Rachel, again, nobody knew this, was journaling that she wanted to create, at the very same time that these guys were doing this, that she wanted to create a chain reaction of good. you know, to point people to God. And so you had these dual things going on, and those stories have continued through, you know, her legacy as the family has shared those stories and trying to make good triumph. So it's just, there's so many elements, spiritual elements to the Columbine story that I think haven't been told in mainstream media. So you get a chance to hear him talk about some of that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of questions after this, but one thing we know for sure that Craig's, he and his sister, both, you know, remarkable, remarkable human beings, and her testimony is very, very, very powerful. So definitely appreciate you bringing that one to the podcast today, Billy. I encourage everyone, as I said, to go check out that full interview here in the description of this podcast. You can check that out. All right, we're going to head over to the main thing now. And the Los Angeles Dream Center has provided opportunities for people to rebuild and transform their lives for decades through community support and housing and resources. That's all free of charge. And Matthew Barnett, who founded the Christian nonprofit, joined Madison Seals to discuss the growing homelessness crisis and how to address an issue that's much, much bigger than housing. That's today's main thing.
Matthew, you're based in Los Angeles, which is one of the big cities in a homelessness crisis, with over 75,000 homeless people in 2023. And you've been working on finding solutions to this problem in your community for more than 25 years. You say it's more than just a housing problem. Can you talk about what you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, there really is a morale problem in California. There's a sense of giving up. You know, we're one third of the nation's population in homelessness. Can you believe it? One third live in our state. And so I think now, rather than really believe that people could be more than just people living on the streets, there's a sense of belief that, well, if we could just give them a place to live and they could just maintain doing whatever they're doing within the safe confines of housing, that would be good enough. But that is really a part of the big problem that we're dealing with here, is that there's no accountability, no structure, and no plan, and really no idea on how to really challenge people to go beyond just having a place to live and having a place to really flourish. And so we're facing a crisis of confidence, a crisis of belief. And ever since COVID, you know, you drive down the street and you see kind of bodies laying on the ground next to the road, like, you know, passed out from using or drugs. And at the Dream Center, what we really do is different. We give people a year to change their life. We give them time, and we walk through the steps of getting them from the streets and into productive society. But, you know, when the general overall feeling is there is really no solutions except for let's build places they can live in. But the problem is they still have to carry themselves with them wherever they go and those issues along the way.
Right. Yeah. And you've talked about something that it's easy to overlook when you see a homeless person or somebody asking for money on the side of the road. And that's that the problems that many of these people are facing are bigger than housing. They're much deeper. So the solutions are also more complicated than that. What are some of the specific services that you found have been most helpful to those living on the streets?
Yeah, I think one of the things that the Dream Center does the best is that, you know, we can meet people at every level. If they're living on the street and they're homeless and need to get off the street, we can take them into our shelter. But the great thing about it is the shelter is only about 30 steps away from the one-year rehabilitation program. So what happens is there's so much positive peer pressure to change and so much belief that people can change. And so when they come into the shelter, the people overseeing them are people in a one-year program telling them the possibilities of what their life can become based upon the fact that they were in the same situation. So it doesn't feel, when they come into a program like the Dream Center, like they're like overwhelming the atmosphere. There's a positive peer pressure to elevate people. And so what we call the Dream Center is the luxury of time. We give people time to really change, because when people don't have time, they get in that survival mindset where they're selling drugs or they're taking drugs in order to you know, mask the pain that they're in from getting back up again. And so when you tell someone all your food, room and board is going to be taken care of for a year, you have a safe place to live, and we'll walk you through the issues of life, people begin to excel. And then a second year program for those who want to rebuild and go back into workplace and have free rent to live on campus as well for the second year. So there's just so much positive peer pressure on this campus to be able to say, hey, here I am, and there's a realistic pathway by which to walk people forward into their life 2, 3, 4 years down the road.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I know for me personally, especially as a female, it's intimidating to address such a large and growing crisis as homelessness, or even to figure out a way to safely help someone in need when you don't know their story, mental state, or motives, any of those things. But as a Christian, we're clearly called to help the poor in one way or another. And I think of a verse in 1 John 3:16 through 18 that says, "If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth." And that's what you do at the Dream Center. As you talked about already, the church is uniquely positioned to address what you call the solution to this crisis, which is tending to the whole person, body, mind, and soul. So what are some ways that the Christian community may already be equipped to help the homeless?
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with a lot of homeless people, it takes several encounters for them to make a decision to go in the right direction. And many times a person who might even come to the Dream Center or serve in your local community will come in contact with someone and just, you know, love them, bless them, carry care packs in their car to be able just to give them away, you know, the basic necessities. Of course, socks is gold. So if you all you could do is just carry socks in your car to bless somebody with, that would be a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And or gift cards or whatever. But just kind of build relationships. There's people that we have encountered for 5-6 years that we just met them with kindness and love where they are, gave them options, you know. People, you can't change for people, but you can be there for people. And so you never know that day where they might come up to you and say, "I'm ready to make the next step of my life. I've hit my rock bottom." We don't know what rock bottom is sometimes, but many of the relationships we have, you can't really fix homelessness by just saying, "Hey, we have a $2 billion plan." It's really got to be encounters, interactions, and just being there for people and showing up in their lives. For them to make that decision. So I have found that a lot of people feel like, "Oh, if I give someone a care package or if I, you know, give a pair of socks, what's that going to do in the long run?" It's all about points of contact and relationships that are created along the way. And so we've seen people that finally came into our program 5 years after our key staff wasn't able to reach them, but a volunteer came in with a different kind of smile. And that was the breakthrough that was needed to take them in. So never underestimate the power of showing up for people, doing basic things of kindness, because those interactions can lead to something more.
Yeah, yeah, that consistency is really key. And it shows people that the community is intentional and that the Christian community specifically is intentional. And for those who aren't familiar with the Dream Center and how it was established, can you talk a little bit about its origins and more about maybe the work that you guys do on a daily basis there?
Yeah, the origin is kind of funny because I came here at 20 years of age because my dad was given a building in the inner city of L.A. and he was trying to find a pastor to take it over because he didn't want, you know, to lose that little building to the banks. And so he was just trying to salvage a church and he asked me to come for 3 months until he could find a pastor. He couldn't find a pastor after 6 months. And now I'm here for 30 years. We're still looking for the pastor, you know. And and the funny thing about it is, you know, we just start taking the houses in our neighborhood and taking people into those houses and helping them. I live with 3 or 4 homeless people and in the house, we just use what we had to serve people. And eventually, you know, we saw a big old hospital on the Hollywood Freeway, 400,000 square feet that was getting ready to be sold to Paramount Studios for $16 million. And the Catholic Church heard our vision, and they said, "We love what you guys want to do to help the neighborhood. We'll sell it to you for $3.9 million. And so now we are sitting on probably the most iconic asset in all of Los Angeles, 400,000 square feet on the Hollywood Freeway, and we're open 24 hours a day. If anybody's homeless, we'll take them in. If anybody wants rehab, we'll take them in. If there's a family that needs housing, we'll take them in. Every day we go out and serve meals in the community. We have 1,200 hot meals that are served every day in our kitchen. People coming every single day to eat for free in the neighborhood. And so it really is a 24/7 church right underneath the Hollywood sign that really picks up the broken pieces of the city, the broken dreams. And it's fascinating that our building sits right below that sign that really picks up a lot of the mess that has been created by our world. And so it's been an unbelievable journey. We have 700 residents who live here every single day. Nobody pays for anything. It's not even government funded. It's just God's people who believe that something good should come out of LA. And so I just walked into the office to do this interview and saw 3 people already checking in, 1 family that was homeless, you know, getting a free place to stay. And based on longevity, a year program. Everything's built on time so that people can really unpack the layers of their life. And we just don't minister to their need, we minister to their potential.
For those who are maybe wanting to find out more, maybe get involved if they're in the Los Angeles area, where can they go to find out more?
Yeah, they can go to dreamcenter.org. If they know somebody who needs a drug and alcohol rehab program, they can apply online. If they want to send a volunteer team to serve, they can do that. If they want to donate or support, it's all there on dreamcenter.org. And so we encourage you to take a look at it.
Well, Matthew, thank you so much.
It's such a joy to be with you.
All right. Incredible interview there. I mean, that is that building. That sounds absolutely astonishing to have a massive Christian ministry like that right underneath the Hollywood sign. And as he just said in the interview there, just people when they were taping it were checking right on in. And that's just what an incredible way to a movie lot, essentially. And it got turned into something like that. Wow. That's pretty remarkable. I had no idea that thing existed.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing organization. I've been dying to get out there and just spend a day or two filming there. Just yeah. so many stories. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it certainly. We'll definitely look into doing that. That would be something else for sure. All right. Well, that's going to leave us with time for one last thing on the podcast today.
Colossians 2:6-7. So then, just as you received Christ Jesus as Lord, continue to live your lives in him, rooted and built up in him, strengthened in the faith as you were taught, and overflowing with thankfulness. And that's just a great reminder of how we're supposed to live. It's challenging sometimes, but I love seeing those verses. They just point us back to where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in our sermon over the weekend, we were talking about sanctification. And so it's not enough to just stamp your, I got my hell insurance, you know, and I'm good to go, and then just live your life however you want. No, you've got to live your lives continually rooted in him and built up in him. And as we're sanctified, as we're on the path towards glorification, but not there yet. So, all right. That's a great spot to leave it on this Monday edition of the Quick Start Podcast. As always, get yourself on over to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com for more news from a Christian perspective. God bless. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise. We'll see you tomorrow with more. Have a great rest of your Monday.